thanks so much for the to the organizers of this conference. So this is work together with Chris Akers, who is just here, and Ronak Soni, who's also in the audience. And the title of this talk is Topological Toy Models for the Emergence of Space-Time. So first I'm going to give a little introduction, and then we'll talk about the kind of lattice model that this talk is going to be about. So kind of the motivation for this is we're going to be working in 2+1D, so 3D gravity, which can be rewritten as a topological field theory, so up to caveats. So I guess for the purposes of this talk, we're kind of just not going to be concerned with these caveats, but this is just to say they are there. And the questions we're interested in are, so the first question is, can we build a tensor network with non-commuting areas? So I'm going to explain what this means very shortly. And the two questions following that are kind of related to that and will motivate it. So one question is, what is the entropy of the physical algebra of observables in a subregion? And how do we define a factorization map producing this entropy? Great, so tensor networks. So we've already had two awesome talks on tensor networks, so I don't have to tell you what they are, but I will tell you about this non-commuting areas problem. So we've kind of heard in the previous talk as well that tensor networks can't accurately model overlapping area cuts. And part of the reason for this is because of the flat entanglement spectrum problem that was mentioned. So basically their entanglement structure is too simple. And by overlapping cuts, I mean, so in this figure, here. So I guess if this is like one boundary region and this is another boundary region, so we have the cut for the first region and the cut for the second region overlap. And right, so this is what I was saying about the flat entanglement spectrum and the fact that a tensor network basically models a fixed area slice. So the argument from this paper by these authors, Bao, Pennington, Source, and Wall, basically they argue that you have an uncertainty relation between the area and the boost angle. So this is gonna be a problem in this like overlapping cut setup. Because let's say we have the tensor network modeling a slice that's like originally this horizontal slice over here. And then let's say we wanna fix the area on this like dotted line on this cut. So what we're doing is we're basically reducing the uncertainty in delta E over here. So this is very small. But then this gives us a large uncertainty in the boost angle. And so we can imagine that this, it changes the curvature of the slice. And so before where this might have been my area cut, it gets changed to this area cut. So that means that the uncertainty in this crossing cut is now very large. And so this is a problem because this means that if our tensor networks were like actually like accurate models, what would happen would be I would fix one area cut and then the uncertainty in the other area cut would be very large. But currently in the models that we do have, like that is not what happens. So this is a problem that we kind of want to think about how to address. Great, and now I will go back and talk about entanglement entropy and how we define entropy. So what we would like to do is we kind of have this area over for G Newton area term that we've heard a lot about, and we would like to interpret this as an entanglement entropy, which is our usual minus trace rho log rho term. But kind of an obstacle to this is the fact that the Hilbert space does not factorize nicely into an A tensor, a B part, and so we need to make a choice factorization map. So there's been a lot of things in the literature, kind of people thinking about how we should do this factorization. So one idea, which is due to Donnelly, is in lattice gauge theory, we can kind of force our Hilbert space to factorize by inserting what are known as edge modes. So say I want to make this cut on my lattice over here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to insert charges on the boundary, and the charge is going to transform under the gauge group on the boundary. So there's been a lot of work kind of speculating, should we think of this entropy SBH as entanglement entropy of these edge modes? And again, like multiple authors in the literature have kind of put forth this idea. So now we are going to specialize to thinking in terms of 3D. And like I said, like up to caveats, we're gonna think of pure gravity in 3D as this parity invariant Chern-Simons theory. So here's the action for that. And then here's, yeah, the paper that kind of talks about the caveats. And again, like, I'm not going to talk about this in this talk. I'm just going to assume this is fine. And kind of just over here to emphasize again, we're going to think about a model like without any matter. So we're just working with pure gravity. So the problem with 3D and kind of trying to put this together with the edge modes picture is that if you calculate the entanglement entropy with the edge modes inserted, so here we're just working with a disk in 2D and kind of just cutting the disk in half. What people who have done this computation have found is that, so there's several terms. So the first term over here scales with the length of this boundary. There's also a topological entanglement entropy term. And then this term is anion entanglement entropy. So in 3D, because things are topological, our degrees of freedom are going to be anion degrees of freedom. And here, so the probabilities are just like if we have a superposition over different representations for the anion. And then you'll just get like a classical Shannon mixing term for that. But kind of what the problem is that, so this is in 3D Chern-Simons theory, but this doesn't quite work for gravity. First of all, we don't want to have this first term because it's divergent, and we also don't want the second term. So it turns out that there's a work by kind of a series of authors, but the most recent paper by Mertens, Simone, and Wong, they kind of worked with the axioms of TQFT and defined this abstract factorization map that lets you get rid of the first two terms. And so kind of this is the motivation for what we want to do, because we're wondering, can we give a concrete definition of this factorization map? So either in terms of an algebra or in terms of boundary conditions. And we will be working on the lattice, and we'll also be working with a very simple toy model. So it turns out that the model we want to study has already been studied by these authors in 2016. So that's Docamp, Dietrich, and Riello. And basically, we're going to be working on the lattice. So you have normal lattice gauge theory, where you impose Gauss law constraints on the vertices, but we're also going to impose flatness constraints on the plaquettes of the lattice. And basically, these additional constraints are going to give us the multipartite entanglement structure that we want. And then kind of the question we want to answer with this model is, can we use this new factorization map to build better tensor networks that do have this non-commuting area property? All right, so next I'm going to explain this lattice model. So we're kind of going to be looking at the quantum double model, which was defined by Kitaev in 97. So Kitaev writes down a Hamiltonian for his model, and we're not going to take this to be the Hamiltonian, but we do want to impose the constraints that appear in this. So basically, we're working on the lattice. The edges of the lattice are labeled by group elements that live in this group G. And so this Hamiltonian has kind of two categories of terms. So the first category of terms, they're going to be on the vertices V. And these are going to enforce gauge invariance at the vertices. So these are going to be basically like electric operators. And then the second kind of category of terms over here are going to be on the plaquettes. And they're going to enforce flatness for us on the plaquettes. And so these are kind of going to be our magnetic constraints. And here's just like kind of a more detailed explanation of what these operators look like. So the vertex operators over here I've defined. So it's ultimately going to be a sum over these vertex operators that are indexed by G. And basically we can think of this A on a vertex V with this G as performing a gauge transformation by G on this vertex. So over here we have kind of the group elements that are living on the links. And then what this operator does is it multiplies each link by this group element G. And it also takes the orientation of the link into account. So some of these are multiplied by the left for these outgoing vertices, and then for the incoming ones, we're multiplying by G inverse on the right. So that's a gauge transformation. And then we're basically making it, by the fact that we're summing over all the elements G, that is enforcing gauge invariance for us. So we can kind of think of this as like a projector at the vertex that projects us onto the gauge invariant subspace. And then for the plaquette operators, so here I have this operator B that is defined on the duplicate P. And again, it's associated with this group element H. So here what it does is I'm going to just follow the links around the duplicate. And again, this takes orientation into account. So whether I take just the group element or its inverse, so I multiply everything along this path. And then the delta function sets this equal to H. So again, flatness is just taking this group element H to be the identity. So these are the two classes of constraints that I have. So the next kind of piece of the quantum double model, and this image is basically just taken from this paper, is I have these ribbon operators, which are going to create anionic excitations. So basically, kind of the ground state of the Hamiltonian I defined before is like your vacuum, and then if you want to create anions, you're gonna use this ribbon. So the way the ribbon works is it has two endpoints, so one here, one here, and it basically creates anions at the endpoints. The ribbon is also indexed by two group elements, H and G. So these are gonna correspond to the fact that this ribbon is gonna have both an electric and a magnetic component. So basically, this spine over here is the magnetic part of the ribbon. And then it does something similar to what we saw with the plaquette operators, which is that we just multiply these group elements, kind of taking the orientation of the ribbon into account as well. So here, this is Y1, Y2, Y3. So I've just like multiplied these and set them equal to G with the delta function. So that's the magnetic part of the ribbon. And then the electric part is, so in addition to the spine, we have these links coming out of the ribbon. And then we saw that with our electric operator, what we did was either left or right multiplication with the group element. So we're gonna do something similar here. And here this group element is H. But what we're doing additionally, as you can see from this definition, is we're kind of also conjugating with this magnetic part. So you can think of this as kind of parallel transporting the action of this electric operator. And it turns out that we need this to have the ribbons basically commute with the constraints at all these points in the middle. So that's with the A sub V and the B sub P constraints in the Hamiltonian that we saw earlier. And so with this definition, the ribbon's gonna commute with the constraints except at the endpoints, which is where the anions live. And kind of just another note related to this figure is that sometimes like when you see these figures, they might also be defined in terms of the triangles. So this is a direct triangle in the literature, and this is a dual triangle. And so basically the spine of the direct triangle is just gonna be this magnetic part again. And then the dual triangle is kind of gonna cross the electric piece. So the link that goes through the dual triangle. And that's just another way to draw the ribbon. Great, so in our model, we're only gonna consider ribbons that end on the physical boundary. So all the ribbons are just gonna be anchored there. And also we're gonna take the topology of our lattice to be the topology of a Cauchy slice. So here's an example over here. So this is the disk. As this slice over here. And then the cylinder over here would be a slice through a two-sided black hole. Great, so now I will talk about the center operators because that's what we're interested in. So what we know from Harlow's 2016 paper is that area operators should be center operators for either side of the cut. So this means that if we make this area cut, we should expect the area operators to commute on the ribbons, or with the ribbons on both sides, since the ribbons are the operators we're interested in this model. So basically, in order to find the center operator, what we're gonna do is we're gonna ensure commutation relations. And specifically, we're gonna check the cases with, if we have multiple operators on the same ribbon, that the center should just commute with other operators that are on that ribbon, and also with ribbons that share one endpoint. So what I mean by ribbons sharing one endpoint is, this will be the following figure. So we have just both of these two ribbons over here. And then they kind of diverge over here. And then, so it turns out that if you impose the commutation relations, you end up having to sum over these group elements that appear in the ribbon. So here K is the electric part, L is the magnetic part. And it turns out that we will have to sum over the conjugacy class of K, and then L we sum over the whole group. So basically the center operator is just labeled by this conjugacy class of the electric part. So note that this has no projection on the magnetic part, but we're still kind of using the magnetic part to do a parallel transport in the definition of the ribbon. And so one can check that these are, first of all, the only operators in the center. And also, for two ribbons that intersect possibly multiple times, we can reduce it to one intersection. So that's why we were kind of only thinking about this one intersection case earlier. And you know, if it shares two endpoints, then it is on the same ribbon, which is the case that we also covered earlier. And the reason why we can do this is basically because this is a topological theory. So we have the two endpoints here, and then we can deform the middle however we want. And we do this by using the constraints, so the vertex and plaquette constraints that I mentioned earlier. And yeah, so here's just an example in this figure of that. So another thing we can check is that using the constraints, we can move this center ribbon to either side of the cut. So yeah, so if my cut were over here, I can have it either on this side of the cut or this side of the cut. Which is also important because we want it to be the center for either side. And now that we've defined the center operators as these special ribbons, we can see that the non-commutation of intersecting cuts is basically going to come from the fact that ribbons do not commute. So if I have one ribbon here and one ribbon here, and they kind of intersect at this middle point, there's going to be like an electric piece over here and an electric piece over here. And these two guys are basically not going to commute. So some other further things that we can check. So one is that the Fourier transform of this ribbon is a projector. And basically what I'm transforming from is I'm transforming from the conjugacy class of the electric part to this representation R. And kind of a thing to note is that R labels the representation corresponding to the entire cut, versus before with the edge mode story, we were kind of like considering each of the cut links independently. And kind of another thing is just that these projectors that I've labeled with R also fully generate the center. And so, yeah, so basically they're complete. They give us a basis for the Hilbert space. And with that, we can define an area operator. So here's the area operator I've kind of defined with the spaces given by the representations from the previous slide. And this gives us the entropy expression that we wanted earlier. And this also comes from a natural extended Hilbert space prescription. Right, so kind of a list of next things we want to think about. So first of all, so we can see that these ribbons do not commute, but the question is, can we connect this commutator to gravity quantities? Another thing we want to think about is how do we add matter to this model? Because right now it's just completely topological. Another thing to think about is, can we generalize this further? So we've kind of talked about this very specific toy model that is the quantum double model, but it turns out the quantum double is like a subset of these what are known as Levin-Wen models or string net models, which is of interest to the condensed matter community. So they describe a more general class of TQFTs, and of course also just 3D gravity itself. Other things to think about are how do we consider multiple intervals and multipartite entanglement? And of course the question, what do we learn about tensor networks in higher dimensions from this lower dimension toy model? And additionally, also the question of what is the connection to loop quantum gravity? Because I believe Delkamp, Dietrich, and Riello were originally like studying this model in that context. Another thing we also kind of want to think about is what is the corresponding boundary condition in the continuum? So we kind of have been talking about this lattice model, but like, what does this correspond to in continuum Chern-Simons? And kind of, so here is the action for Chern-Simons again. And if you vary this action, so you get this boundary term over here. And so I should also mention that this is kind of a different setup now, because before we had this 2D disk that we were cutting in half, but now we have this 3D sphere and we're cutting this in half. So the boundary is each like two-dimensional. But yeah, so we have this boundary term, and we also have this. So this is the bulk term that gives us the flatness condition, because it just gives us f equals to zero. But this is a boundary term that we want to set to zero. And kind of there's a standard thing to do in the literature, which is to take the time component of a to be zero. So we set a naught equal to zero. But that is what ends up giving us the divergent, kind of the L over epsilon piece that we were trying to get rid of. So the question is, can we pick the right boundary conditions that don't have that? And we're kind of thinking a candidate could be setting a phi to a constant and then setting the integral of a naught to be zero. But this is still ongoing work. And yeah, so thanks so much for coming to this talk.
Thank you very much, Annie. Questions? Yes, Isaac, can you?
Thanks for a nice talk. I guess, a bit of background is that we calculate something similar, but except we took the expectation value of the commutator of the modular Hamiltonians. Our expectation is that if you have a zero chirocentral charge, then this expectation value would be zero in general. Whereas if you have non-zero chirocentral charge, you expect at least the expectation to be non-zero. If you don't have the gravitational Chern-Simons term in this effective theory, and just the normal Chern-Simons term, then I don't quite see how you would get this term, like this this chirocentral charge term. So I guess my question is, like, do you expect this theory to be the correct one, or I guess I would personally expect that you would have to add additional terms. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
So I guess you mentioned taking an expectation value. So I guess like we actually want to take the expectation value of this as well. Like the entropy is given by something that looks like trace of expectation value of like rho evaluated with this area operator. Yeah, sorry, I'm not sure if that answers the question, but there is an expectation value there.
Maybe we can talk about it later.
Okay.
So if I understand correctly, like the non-commuting behavior of your area operator is because the anions, they have some non-trivial grading angles, right? Is that right?
Exactly. So it's basically from the non-commutation of the anions or the ribbons that are creating the anions. Yeah.
Right. And my question is that for gravity theory, you said you can write it as some, you know, Chern-Simons theory. What is the anion there?
So I guess the R here is like the representations of the gauge group, and I believe for gravity it's like SL2R cross SL2R. Although there are the caveats from that paper that I mentioned, but
Right. Is there any physical meaning of like these different representations? For anions we can think of it as some particles, right? But you know, in your gravity theory, what does this anion mean physically?
So I guess we think that the entanglement is from like anionic entanglement entropy. But I guess the question you're asking is like, so I guess the anions are the topological degrees of freedom. And then kind of we're thinking of this as the, and they live in these representations of the gauge group. And then we're thinking of this as entanglement basically from those representations.
Sure. I have a question. So you mentioned that there's some caveat to you like describing gravity as Chern-Simons. I was just wondering if you could very briefly mention what it is. Is it because the theory is not gauge invariant?
So I guess like Chern-Simons theory is like classically equivalent to Friedrich gravity, but we don't know like quantumly if that's still true. And so I guess like if you include quantum corrections, and so this paper kind of also talks about that, but for the purposes of our work, we kind of just assume that you can write it that way.
Great, any more questions? Then let's thank Annie again. Thank you very much.